Good morning. It's good to see everybody here bright and early this morning. Is everybody feeling okay? Everybody awake? Extra coffee? I do not like daylight savings time. You know, I like the fact that all of my devices and my phones and Alexa and everything else automatically adjust to daylight savings time. However, I do not automatically adjust to daylight savings time. But here we are once again. It's good to see everybody this morning. It's always good to be here and be with you and worship with you and spend time in song and fellowship. And we're going to continue the sermon series that we began this month. And we're going to continue working through this concept of one name under heaven. And we've started the discussion about the meaning of the word's name and the concept of what it means and that kind of an idea. And we're going to continue thinking about what it's like and what humanity in general has done with that idea. You know, what have we done with the name of God? What have we done with the authority of God? And so one thing I want you to think about this morning as we enter into this particular lesson is disappointment. Have you ever been disappointed? And no, I'm not talking about disappointed with the show or maybe a restaurant or something like that, but just with people. Have you ever been disappointed with somebody? Has somebody ever disappointed you? Or maybe you've disappointed yourself. Have you ever disappointed yourself? And you thought, man, I can't believe I did that or said that. I'm better than that, right? Or somebody you looked up to or somebody you respected and they did something or said something and you think, man, it was so disappointing, right? I think we've all kind of been there. We've been in these situations where we've been disappointed with either ourselves or somebody else. But you know, when I read through the Bible and I read through the Old Testament, there are a number of times when I am disappointed. I'm disappointed with people. I'm disappointed with people's responses. I'm disappointed with those who seem to be close to things of God that I have never seen or experienced. And it seems like God's relationship with people in the past was so uniquely different in regards to where he was and his actions that I'm disappointed and how people respond to that, respond to things that I would long to see, things I would love to experience. I mean, I would love to have seen and experienced what Adam and Eve experienced in the garden, that relationship they had with God, to see God, and I'm disappointed with the decisions they made. And I'm disappointed with others throughout the Old Testament, even into the New Testament, we find times of disappointment, but as we read through the Bible, we also find times of encouragement, because out of all the times when people disobeyed God and sinned against God and turned against God and made bad choices, we often find that there is at least one person that makes a good choice. And in that case, our hope for humanity is kind of rekindled there for a moment to say, wow, maybe this thing is going to work out. Maybe there is hope for us. Right? And one of those stories that we run into in the book of Genesis is the story of Noah, right? One that we're really familiar with and we've studied and looked at so many times, but it's a good reminder that out of the midst of all the chaos, of all the sin, as the world chooses to go its own way, that there could be one person who can make a difference, one person who can make a choice whose consequences will affect others. So Genesis chapter 6, starting at verse 5. And so the Lord saw that the wickedness of man was great on the earth, and every intention of the thoughts of his heart was only evil continually. And the Lord regretted that he had made man on the earth, and it grieved him in his heart. Verse 7. So the Lord said, I will blot out man, whom I have created from the face of the land, man and animals, creeping things, birds of the heaven, for I am sorry that I had made them. I love my freedom. How about you? Don't you like that? Like that concept? I like the concept. I love freedom. I'm sure you love freedom. We love the idea of being who we want to be. We love the idea of thinking what we want to think and doing what we want to do. We like the concept of freedom of choice, but freedom comes at a cost. Freedom comes at a cost, right? I mean, just think about your everyday life. You have a freedom, the freedom to make a lot of choices in your life. You can eat pretty much whatever you want to eat. I mean, you know, within certain parameters, obviously, but you can eat pretty much what you want to eat. If you want to eat cookies and cake for dinner and lunch and breakfast, you can do that. And unless, of course, you're a kid and then you're not allowed to do that. But most of us adults can do that. We can make that choice. We can go down that road. If you want to choose to never exercise in your entire life, then you have the freedom to make that choice. But obviously, those choices are going to come with consequences, right? And we know that. We understand that there are consequences to our choices, that we might have the freedom to do something. We're free to make those choices. But there are certainly consequences that come along with choices. God has given humanity freedom, right? We're free. We're free to make a lot of choices. We're free to do a lot of things. We're free to decide for ourselves what is good and what is bad, what is right and what is wrong. That doesn't mean we're always right, but it means that we're free to make choices. But those freedoms come with consequences, and that's what we're seeing here in the text, is that God created humanity with freedom. We're free to make choices, and humanity made a choice, didn't they? They made a choice. They decided, this is how I want to live. This is what I want to think about. This is what I want to participate in. These are the kinds of things I want to do. And they made that choice. And here are now the consequences. God looks at humanity and he sees all the choices that humanity has made. And it grieves him in his heart. And he says, humanity has become evil, right? Evil to the core. Even the thoughts have become corrupt and evil. That all of this is what they've done with their freedom. This is what they've done with their choices. This is what they have done with free will. They have corrupted themselves and they have made these choices. But then you get to verse 8. In verse 8, right, because that's disappointing, isn't it? I mean, we're thinking, man, all that has happened, the fall, the casting out of Adam and Eve from the garden, all of the situations that we see, I mean, we're thinking, why? Why make this choice? Why go down that road? But then we have a glimmer of hope when we get to verse 8, when it says, Noah found favor. Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. Right? So that gives us a little bit of hope, right? That at least somebody out of all the people in the world, at least somebody made the right choice. Somebody decided to follow God. Somebody chose to deny themselves of some of the pleasures that life may offer and to follow after God. In verse 9, it tells us that Noah was a righteous man, that he was blameless in his generation, and Noah walked with God. And Noah also had three sons. We know them, Shem, Ham, Japheth, right? We know the sons of Noah because they are the ancestors of the rest of the world, right? But that is the story of this one particular man. As the whole world has been corrupt and made a choice to not walk with God, to not follow God, this man and his family made a different choice. A different choice. You know, and it's hard to imagine. It's hard. I don't know how many people lived on the earth during that time. They surmise it was, you know, a lot. I mean, we don't really have any particular numbers, but I mean, still, there was a lot of time that spanned from the fall in the garden to this time that God decides to wipe out the known humanity and start over again with Noah and his family. But we think, well, surely there was somebody else, right? I mean, you know, it couldn't have just been Noah. You know, out of all the people in the world, only Noah? He was the only one? And it's hard for us to imagine that, but it seems that that's how the story has unfolded. And God finds grace. He finds favor in this one man. He was righteous. He was blameless in his generation. He walked with God. He made his choice. He made his sacrifices, because that's really what that is. We make sacrifices. And he walked with God while everybody else walked away from God. And that was the choice that he made. Look at verse 11. Verse 11 says, "Now the earth was corrupt in God's sight, and the earth was filled with violence. And God saw the earth, and behold, it was corrupt, for all flesh had corrupted their way on earth." You know, people are not puppets, right? We're not puppets. We don't have strings attached to us. We don't have somebody controlling our lives in the sense that they're forcing us to do certain things. But people are also not free to do whatever they want to do without the consequences that go along with it, right? I mean, yes, we're free to make those choices, but we're not free from the consequences of those choices. And certainly they were no exception to this. They made their choice. They corrupted themselves. They walked away from God. And they are going to face the consequences of those choices. Now, the text says that all flesh had corrupted their way, and God saw it. God saw that. Now, I don't know if maybe they thought that God didn't see. I don't know if they had gotten to a point where they didn't believe in God anymore. I don't really know. But God witnessed this. He was able to actually see all that humanity was doing, all that humanity was thinking. And God saw his image bearers, right? The people that he created, the representatives that he put here on earth, corrupting their ways. And their actions did not only reflect on themselves. Their actions did not only reflect on them. It wasn't just all about them. But their actions reflected on the character, on the nature, on the identity of God. Right? So that's really the heart of all of this. Is that this type of corruption, this sin, and sin in general, is not just going to affect the person, but it's going to affect the Creator in many ways. Because he looks at his creation that he loves and he's created and he's put on this earth for a purpose, and he watches them slowly but surely begin to walk away and corrupt their path and corrupt their ways and engage in sin. And it affects him to the point where he finds it necessary, right, to completely wipe out humanity and start all over again with this person who has found favor in his eyes. God decides that this is the right way to do it. Their actions affected other people. Because we tend to think about our choices as just that, right? Our choices. If I make a choice, that's my choice. If I make a decision, that's my decision, right? If I want to satisfy a desire, that's my business. That's none of your business, right? If people desire to engage in drunkenness or sexual immorality or any of those things, they think, well, that's my business. You know, what I do behind closed doors, what I do in my mind or in the privacy of my home or wherever, that's my business. That's none of your business. And that tends to be the thinking of a lot of people, right? A lot of people kind of lean that direction, that I can do whatever I want to do and it's none of your business. Nobody's going to see. Nobody's going to know. Nobody needs to know. Nobody's going to care. It's not going to affect anybody else. Because, right, that's where we draw the line, isn't it? As long as what I'm doing doesn't affect anybody else, then it doesn't matter. I can do it, right? But that's not how things are, is it? Because there will always be someone who can actually see what's going on behind closed doors. There's somebody who knows what goes on in the home. There's somebody who knows what goes on in the mind. There's somebody who knows what goes on in secret, and it affects him. God knows, right? Because all these people were just going about their life and doing their own thing and thinking their own things and enjoying their life. Right? I mean, yes, there was violence, but that comes with the territory of the nature of the things that they were participating in. But you know that they were fulfilling these desires and they were living life, and God saw all of it. He witnessed every moment of it, and it grieved him in his heart, right? And this whole concept of it's none of your business, it doesn't matter, I could do whatever I want to do, is a complete lie, right? But it's been a lie from the beginning, hasn't it? I mean, that's kind of the idea of Adam and Eve in the garden and the tree of life, that here they are, you know, here's Eve, just Eve and the serpent, you know, Adam's kind of hanging out in the background, nobody else is around. Just go ahead and take it. You know you want it. Go ahead and take it. Go ahead and eat it. Go in and do whatever you want to do. Fulfill that desire. I know what God said. You know, God said, don't eat this or you'll die. But I'm telling you, that's not going to happen. He's hiding something. He's keeping something from you. Go ahead and take it. Go ahead and eat. Go ahead and satisfy that desire. You will not die. And of course, we know the rest of the story. Eve participates in that. But that's our story too, isn't it? That's our story. There's always this lingering voice in the back of our head that says, you know what, just do it. Fulfill the desire. You know, eat the cookies, eat the cake. Who cares? It doesn't affect anybody. There won't be any consequences. In fact, the only consequence that you're going to experience is satisfaction. That seems to be our mindset. So go ahead and participate. Go ahead and do it. But that's the lie, isn't it? That's the lie. Because there will always be somebody affected, whether it's us, we're always affected by sin, right? The consequences of sin, the consequences that come with committing sin and being guilty of sin, but there's also God who sees everything that we do and who is grieved, right? He is grieved in his heart with our participation in the things that are unholy and unrighteous. In Hebrews chapter 11, the Hebrew writer talks about Noah, and he says, by faith, Noah, being warned by God concerning events not yet seen, in reverent fear constructed an ark for the saving of his household. And by this, he condemned the world and became an heir of righteousness that comes by faith. Right? That was Noah's decision. That was Noah's choice. By faith. Was Noah perfect? Well, we don't really know a lot about Noah, right? I mean, before the flood, we know something about him after the flood. You know, he made some mistakes. But we don't know a lot about him before the flood other than he found favor in the eyes of God. But we can assume that Noah wasn't a perfect person. We only know who was ever perfect on this earth. So we assume that Noah wasn't perfect. He probably wasn't. He's probably sinned. He's probably made some bad choices in his life. But what separates Noah and other righteous people from the rest of the world is that Noah had faith when others did not. Noah trusted God when others didn't trust God. Noah was committed to God when others were not committed to God. Noah believed God and Noah walked with God, right? That doesn't require perfection, but it does require a lot of forgiveness and a lot of faith, a lot of trust, and a lot of commitment, right? And a lot of understanding the will of God. And that's where Noah stood in his relationship to God. While the rest of the world walked the course of the world, he walked with God. But the results of his choices, what were the results of Noah's choices? The salvation of his household. Isn't that what the text teaches us? Isn't that what the Hebrew writer wants to point out? That the faith of Noah did indeed affect other people. Just like sin affects other people, whether we think it does or doesn't, it does. Right? That when we are faithful, it affects other people. Our faithfulness will have an impact on other people's lives. And for Noah, it wasn't the whole world that he impacted, obviously. But he did impact his family. He did impact that small little community that he had that belonged to him, that he was in charge of. He did impact that, right? And the results of his faithfulness were the salvation of his household. Folks, if you're a parent or if you're a grandparent, this should hit you hard. that your actions, your faith, your response to God, your trust, your commitment will indeed impact your family. Right? And Noah sees this. Noah witnessed this as he and his family are together. And I imagine, as I'm thinking, kind of thinking through this whole scenario, I imagine that whenever that door is being closed, you know, the rains have come and the floods are coming and that door closed. I imagine that when Noah is in this boat that he constructed with his family, that he's not looking around and thinking about all the missed opportunities. I don't imagine that Noah is sitting there and wishing, man, I sure wish I would have indulged. You know, I wish I would have done those things. I wish I would have participated because now the opportunity's gone and I'll never know what it feels like to be wealthy. I'll never know what it feels like to have done all those things that everybody else was participating in. I don't think Noah thought about that at all. I think what Noah did is he held his wife, he looked around in that boat, and he saw his sons and his daughter-in-laws. And I imagine that Noah praised God. That's what I imagine. He didn't mourn over missed opportunities, but he praised God for an opportunity to be faithful and to see his family in that boat as the rest of the world perishes all around him. That's what I imagine, right? That Noah's choices affected his whole family, right? To Noah, it was worth it. It was worth the suffering. It was worth the mocking. I don't know if he got mocked, but I assume he did. I mean, come on, let's face it. You know, you got a guy out there building a giant boat. Somebody's going to say something. You know, and I imagine he was. I imagine he was criticized. I imagine his sons were abused, you know, to the point where they probably thought, this isn't worth it. You know, what's all this faith in God? Nothing's going to happen. We've never seen this before. How do we know there's a flood coming? I mean, Noah's crazy. All of that he endured. In the midst of an evil and corrupt generation, he endured those things, right? And he was willing to, because the outcome was worth the sacrifice, wasn't it? The outcome was worth the abuse. It was worth the suffering. It was worth the mocking. It was worth all of it. Because at the end, as he sat there, he's not going to regret a moment of it as the world perishes around them. Peter, in his letter, picks up on this idea. And he is speaking to a different generation, but still a wicked generation. I mean, things haven't changed all that much. People are still wicked. People still make bad choices. And in this case, we have a group of people like Noah who are faithful. And they're committed and they're in service to Jesus. They belong to Jesus. But they still have to live in the midst of a world that doesn't obey God. And they live in a world that mocks them for their faith. They live in a world that hates them because they're faithful. They live in a world that's going to criticize them and call them crazy because they're making sacrifices and they're not indulging in life's pleasures. And there are consequences to these kinds of decisions. But look at verse 14. Peter says, but even if you should suffer for righteousness' sake, you will be blessed, right? Just like Noah, you suffer, but you'll be blessed, right? Have no fear of them, nor be troubled, but let your hearts honor Christ the Lord as holy, always being prepared to make a defense to anyone who asks you for a reason for the hope that is in you, yet do it with gentleness and respect. When people mock you, when people make fun of you, when people criticize you, when people ask questions about your actions and why you make the choices that you make, give a defense. Be ready. Be ready to say, I serve Jesus. Be ready to defend your faith. Be ready to say, I belong to Jesus. I have been forgiven. I no longer live anymore. That's not who I am. And be willing to boldly proclaim, and he says, with gentleness and with respect. In verse 16, he says, having a good conscience, right? Because we have to have that. You know, the world's going to say you're crazy, you're doing things wrong, you're making bad decisions, you're not doing things right, but I have a good conscience. Noah had a good conscience when people thought that he was crazy, When he sacrificed to do things that other people weren't willing to do, when he made the choices that other people weren't willing to make, he had a good conscience. Now, there are people of the world who tell you that you're crazy and you shouldn't have a good conscience, that you should feel guilty for not living like everybody else lives, but they don't. We don't. We shouldn't. Noah didn't. He had a good conscience about what he was doing, so that when you are slandered, those who revile your good behavior in Christ may be put to shame, for it is better to suffer for doing good than if that should be God's will than for doing evil. And it's true, isn't it? It's so much better. I mean, it may not seem better in the moment, and it obviously doesn't feel better, and we don't ever want to be involved in that, but ultimately, it's better to suffer for doing good. Because if you suffer for doing evil, then the consequences of your evil is your suffering. And you deserve it, right? We deserve to be treated that way when we are doing evil things. But then if you're doing good, like Jesus as the prime example, we think about him and his sacrifice that he made, and we think, you know, he didn't deserve that, right? But his suffering was for his righteousness. His suffering was not for his wickedness. And that's the same with us too, isn't it? We may suffer for doing good, and it's worth it. It's worth it because the outcome is worth it. Look at verse 18. For Christ also suffered once for sin, the righteous for the unrighteous, that he might bring us to God, being put to death in the flesh, but made alive in the spirit, in which he went to proclaim to the spirits in prison. See, Christ suffered for doing good. He set the example. He set the standard. He said, this is what it looks like to be my follower. And it's not all fun and games. It's not always easy. And you may suffer at the hands of unrighteous people, just as Christ suffered at the hands of unrighteous people. Right? That's what it looks like to be a Christian. It doesn't look like what people say on TV, does it? It doesn't look like when you hear people on TV, they say that you're going to be blessed and you're going to be rich and everything's going to be awesome. They're lying. They're lying. Right? Peter and his generation would say that's a lie. Now, we've been very fortunate in America to have some of those things, but that may not always be the case. It's not always the case. It's not always the outcome of our faith. The outcome of our faith may very well be suffering. In verse 20, he says, because they formerly did not obey, when God's patience waited in the days of Noah. So he's bringing us back to that scenario, right? That think about Noah and his generation. It was wicked. It was evil. Walked away from God. Was grieving God's heart to see humanity. And then there was this one man who was faithful. And look what happened. Look what happened to him. Right? He endured the suffering, and he and his household were saved. It's a beautiful image. And then Peter is bringing us home to that same scenario. He's looking at his generation. He's saying, look around you. These people are wicked. These people are evil. These people are making bad choices. You're suffering at their hands. Right? But just wait. Just wait and see what God will do. Because in reality, they're perishing and you're being saved. Now, it may look like you're a criminal. They may be treating you like a criminal. They may be treating you like you're the worst criminal that has ever lived by the way they're treating you. But you have a good conscience because God sees your faith and your good behavior just as much as he sees their disobedience. And it may not look like it from the outside because you're the one suffering, but in reality, they're the ones perishing. And you're the ones being redeemed. It doesn't look like that, but that's how the reality of things are. They're the ones outside the boat. You're the one inside the boat. They're the ones drowning in the water. You're the ones being saved. That's the reality of it. And God waited patiently in the days of Noah while the ark was being prepared, in which a few, that is eight persons, were brought safely through the water. Out of all the world, eight people. So when we have a small little community of believers that is enduring persecution and suffering, We remember those 8 people out of all the world who were saved, and we say, it's okay. I can endure this. I can suffer through this. I can work through this because I know my God is rescuing me from all of it and that I am being saved. And Peter points to that day and he says, just remember what God did in the past and have faith in the present to bring you through the troubled waters. And then verse 21, he says, baptism, which corresponds to this. Of course, these are all baptized believers, right? Baptism, which corresponds to this, now saves you. Not of the removal of the dirt from the body, but an appeal to God for a good conscience through the resurrection of Jesus Christ. If you've been baptized into Jesus, you're saved. But you're also being saved. I mean, there's a dualistic concept here. Yes, you're forgiven of your sins. And that's a beautiful thing because that's what we do at baptism is we put away the old self. We are raised up to newness of life. We have the forgiveness of sins. But Peter is pointing out the fact that we are also being saved, right? We're being rescued. Like Noah and his family who are being rescued as they sit in that boat while the rest of the world is perishing, we too, presently, right now, as we sit in Jesus, as we're a part of the community of Jesus, as we belong to Jesus, and we got there through baptism, didn't we? God's rescuing you right now from everyone. And you don't have to make an appeal to them. You don't have to appeal to the world. You don't have to make excuses as to why you're right and you're righteous. The only person you're accountable to is God. You make an appeal to Him. And guess what? If you're in Christ Jesus and you are faithful and you're committed, then you need to have a good conscience. You need to have a good conscience that you have made the right choice. And if you're suffering, if you find yourself suffering and persecuted for your faith, and I hope you never do, but maybe someday you will, and if you find yourself in that position and you're treated like a criminal, continue in the faith and recognize that you have a good conscience. Even though they treat you like a criminal, you have a good conscience. Right? Because you're making that appeal to God and not to them. You know, you don't make an appeal to people who are perishing, right? You don't have to explain to them while you're doing the things you're doing. You don't have to explain to them while you're being righteous as if they are the ones who are judging, as if you're accountable to them. Now, you may be called to give a defense for your actions in hopes that they too might join you. But that's different. I am not responsible to tell anybody. I'm not responsible to go to somebody and say, hey, I'm living the Christian life, and let me tell you all about my Christian life, and you be the judge. You tell me, am I a Christian or am I not? Am I saved or am I not? They're not accountable to me, and I'm not accountable to them. I don't have to do that. But it is God that I seek approval of. And my conscience is clear because I put my faith in Him and not in people. Don't put your faith in people who are perishing, but put your faith in the one true God who is saving us from a world that's perishing and bringing us out into salvation, right? And in the end, at Jesus' return, when you look around, when we look around at those who are experiencing the resurrection, which of course we recognize will be the righteous and the unrighteous, and we see how we're all being brought into these different groups, and we're, however that's going to be, I don't know if we actually can see it or not, but I imagine it being like that. And I imagine that day coming and participating in the resurrection of life and being part of the righteous. I imagine, just like Noah did, that at that moment in time, when that time takes place and that time in history actually happens, that there will not be a moment that any of us are going to look back and say, I wish I had participated in that. I wish I had made more money. I wish I was more popular. I wish I had done those things. There will not be a single person in that group who's being resurrected into life and going to be with Jesus who is going to make that kind of statement to say, I wish I participated in worldly things because now I regret it. Not a single one. But I can assure you there'll be plenty of people who did participate who will regret it. And they're going to look back and they're going to say, I wish I had made a different choice. I wish I had obeyed God. I wish I had obeyed Jesus. Because at that point, they'll all know who God is and they all will know who Jesus is. And they're going to say that. I wish I did not live to myself. I wish I had lived to God, because now I am perishing and they're being saved. I am certain that those statements will be made and those thoughts will be had. And just like the days of Noah, we have a choice, right? We can either be part of the perishing or part of the saved. We can be those who are being rescued by God or those who are being condemned. And that choice is made right now, right? It's made right here and right now before the flood comes, before the rain comes, before the judgment comes. As long as you have breath in your lungs, as long as you got up this morning, as long as you were able to come into this building, you now have a choice right now. Put your faith in God. Commit yourself to God. Follow God. Listen to God. Walk with God. And you will be part of those who are being rescued from this corrupt and perverse generation that's already being condemned and will certainly perish in the judgment. If you haven't made that choice this morning, if you've been sitting on the fence maybe or thinking about it and you haven't made that choice and you desire to become part of the community of believers, if you desire to be in the boat where people are being rescued from the floodwaters, then this is your opportunity. You pass through the waters of baptism to be brought into the family of God, to have your sins forgiven, to become part of the family of God. Maybe you've made that choice and you've fallen away from it and you need a renewal and a refresher. This is an opportunity for you to come forward as we stand and as we sing.